equivalent to our Chapter 9s. Then they've reached failed state status. Mm. We're far from that. We've come out of a national election cycle. We're going into a local election cycle. We have this fiercely independent media that I talk of. We have these Chapter 9s. We have a functioning democracy. We have a functioning judiciary, although we have heard that there may be people compromised within the judiciary. But how we've survived when we are regarded as one of the five most violent societies in the world, we have one of the highest rates of GBVF and other violent crimes, I don't know. It talks to the nature of us as South Africans. And the fact that we haven't reached failed state status when we hear about just how compromised our law enforcement was and the deficit of leadership, it again encourages me as a South African that we have something special in us that a lot of nations don't have. They would have reached failed state status given the same circumstances we've had to live through.
In studio, it's not via WhatsApp or via the landline, organized crime expert that we've spoken to for more than a year on the show, Chad Thomas, who's in Cape Town at the moment. We've managed to snap him up and he's joining us in studio up until just before five. We're quickly paying the bills. We come back. Let's look at a year on. Monday Motivation in conversation with organized crime expert Chad Thomas in studio. A year on since General Kwanazi addressed the nation, the Matlanga Commission, some shocking revelations, attempted assassinations, couple of killings. We've got some problems in respect of our political assassinations. Some have questioned the local government elections coming up in November. Will it have an impact?
Yeah.
Chad, we're a couple of months away.
It will. You know what the scary thing is about political violence in South Africa? When you go back to the early 90s, you had the IFP, MP, fighting the ANC SDUs, the self-defense units. It played out in Natal. It played out what was then Natal. It played out in what was then the Transvaal, in Katlehong, Vosloorus, to Khoza. We had the Boipatong massacre. But that was two rival political parties fighting each other. What we're now seeing in respect of political killings is cannibalism from within. The people who are killing other people are from the same party who want to go higher on the list, because the higher up the list they go, because we work on a list system in terms of our electorate in South Africa, is the closer they get to being the nominated ward councillor. So if they can reach the apex in their community and get their picture on the placards and get voted in, they can be put onto various committees. They can make money from various tenders. So the greed factor is what's driving what we're seeing, especially in KZN, in respect of these politically aligned killings. And it's a frightening concept. One would find it hard to believe that we would still have infighting between political parties. But it's an even harder concept to wrap your mind around, that you've got this infighting just so that you can get further up a list so you can make money.
Now, Chad, a couple of months away from the local government elections, we've seen attempted assassinations and assassinations of ward councillors that effectively would have been on the ballot. Would that have an impact on local communities and South Africans actually going to the polls? Or would this be something which political parties would deal with prior to 4th of November?
So there's two issues that stand out there. The first is the person whose picture goes onto the placards in the community, where you must put a cross next to their name on the ballot. How did they get into that position? Was it because they were truly entrusted by the community, or is it because they moved up that list through assassinations, intimidation, harassment? So are you voting for somebody who should justifiably be there? Secondly, we've got a problem in South Africa with people wanting to register to vote. And it's a strange dilemma. People, when they protest about service delivery, will destroy the very services that were delivered to them, albeit those services are very inferior to what they expected. They'll destroy the little bit that they have to try and make a point. And then they'll stay away from the ballot box on the day of the elections as if to say, well, that's my way of protesting. And they don't realize that that must be the worst form of protest. The most important thing we have in South Africa, which was granted to everybody in 1994, that was so hard fought for, is the right to vote. And that franchise can never be wasted. It can never be squandered. Yet people stay away from the ballot box as a form of objection, and the people that they may be voting for shouldn't be the people whose picture is on that placard and whose name is on that ballot.
Chad, if we wrap, this should have been a podcast for us to go into a series, okay? But if we wrap in the next couple of minutes, a lot has happened during the period of the Matlanga Commission. A lot more is still going to happen. But amongst others, General Feroz Khan, the most recent, some have argued it was a staged assassination. His attorneys were kind of explaining and arguing that it was not. But what was the coincidence behind this attempted or hit on General Feroz Khan literally days before he had to appear before the Matlanga Commission? Coincidence or not? I guess the jury will probably remain out in respect of this for a long time.
So full disclosure, I've known General Feroz Khan since he was a sergeant. I've known him for 34 years. He's been in the police for 37 years. And I also know his attorney, Muhammad Vali, very well. And I met his advocate Khan, at the hospital following the shooting. When one looks at the circumstances of the shooting, and they said he was coming from a soccer, he was watching Bafana, he wasn't. He was coming from Vali's office. And there's footage that he was, in fact, being followed. Its timing is horrific because it does send the message, was this staged? Was it like Brian Mokgosi, who staged a fake assassination hit in Katlehong? Was it like Suleiman Karim, who took off sick? Was it like Mike van Wyk, who took off sick? But in this particular instance, where he was shot, how he was shot, and his actual condition, and I've seen the 3-page medical report from Milpark Trauma, he's in a critical condition. He was shot in the stomach. He at the bullet landed between L3 and L4. It's damaged the nerve that links his lumbar to his spine. He's had two operations. He was placed into induced coma. He was incubated. If somebody's going to stage a fake shooting,
to that degree,
you're not going to shoot yourself in the stomach or have somebody shoot you in the stomach. Everybody knows, we've all watched the movies, the worst place to get shot is the stomach. You know, head and heart, you're dead. Stomach, you're in pain. You want to do a flesh wound, it's going to be the arm or the leg. But be that as it may, that speculation on my part, having known the man, I've made that caveat and that disclosure. I do think that he has a lot of things to answer for, and I do think there's a lot of people that wouldn't want him to testify. So the chances of this being a hit or a warning to him is highly, highly probable. The chances that it was staged, less probable.
Chad Thomas, thanks for the great conversation. Thanks for taking time out. We're thankful actually to Kay for reaching out to you and arranging this. Fantastic to have you in studio. Please come again when you're back in the city. You're a great guest to have on the show.
Thank you so much. It's always great hearing Kay's voice asking me to come on. And I really enjoy the energy of your station. And thank you to the listeners.
Thank you very much.